Welcome back to another episode of Unpacking with Jennifer Sattell. As we ended with part one, where you guys are getting the part two and you had to wait. And I'm very excited to still be talking to Judy, which is one of my most favorite humans. And I literally will text her, "You're like my favorite human." I love her. My friends know all about her. And it's just, you know, it's very special. If you listen to the first part or the first half, you know kind of how we met. And one of the things we alluded to was when we met, she had the girls were, because they're only about, you know, less than a week apart. Her daughter was going to have a birthday party, her first birthday party at the house. And I also think that might have been some of the motivation, I think.
Yeah, that was for sure.
But in the meantime, you know, Judy had, I think she had told me via either our phone call or email or whatever, that she had had, you know, some stuff going on. And one of those things is she has three kids. And then I'm going to let you kind of just take the wheel, because I'm not, you know, I'm just going to have you just talk about, you know, what you were going through during Mimi, from Mimi. It was like a week after she was born, wasn't
yeah,
it?
2 weeks.
Two weeks.
So I think when I first reached out to you, I didn't bring it up, because I was like, okay, well, my garage is chaos. I need help.
Yes.
I need help. But yes, that was right. It was, I was about to have Mimi's first birthday party, and, yes. And I needed help because it was at the house. Looking back on it, I don't know why it was at the house, but it was at the house and having people over. And so I needed, like, not only the garage, but I think you also kind of helped me, like, figure out a little bit of the organization inside the house,
yeah,
too. Because
yeah.
I needed stuff, like, spread out for anyways.
Yeah,
for
and
party.
I think this is when this kind of came up and you kind of alluded to what had been going on. Because it's pretty tragic and also, I mean, it was probably all of those things, right?
So let me tell you.
Yes.
So, or tell everyone.
Me to shut up.
I think you.
Tell me to shut up.
Mimi, her name is Milana. She's my third child. And 2 weeks after she was born, Sam is 14, Eli is 12, and then Mimi is almost 10. But 2 weeks after she was born, Eli had a stroke, and he was 2 at the time. And it was a lot of trying to figure out, like, what was going on, why it happened. Let me backtrack, actually. Mimi was born not breathing. I don't know if you know that. And so she went straight, and she was a third repeat C-section. And so she went straight from the operating room into the NICU. She was fine after a few days, but that was, like, obviously a lot. And then we came home, and then a week later,
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah. So she was fine. I mean,
yeah.
I think it was probably harder on Greg at that time than me, because he knew what was going on, that, you know, she wasn't breathing. But she was fine. I mean, the hospital was amazing. She was fine. So then Eli had a stroke. And so much of that is a blur. And I can talk about it now sort of without emotion. But it was a rough year. So you met me at the end of that year. And Eli at that time was recovering from brain surgery. So we learned that the stroke was caused by, I refer to it as a vascular tumor. The official name for it is cavernous malformation or cavernous angioma. And what it is it's sort of like a malformed ball of blood vessels, sort of resembling like a blackberry or a mulberry.
Oh, wow.
That is in the brain. And they can be in anywhere in the brain or the spine. And he had had one. And some of them are genetic and some of them are called sporadic. His is sporadic, meaning there was no genetic component to it. It just randomly happened.
And there was no signs before. Like, so, nothing. Was there any signs before? Now, knowing?
Yeah, looking back, there were some signs. The biggest ones. So the location of his was in his cerebellum, which traditionally is known for balance and coordination.
Okay.
But now that we're, like, almost 10 years in, we know that there's so much more that the cerebellum controls, which I'll talk about in a second. But he had had some, it also causes nausea. So he had had some, like, episodes of nausea that I sort of attributed to like, oh, regular car sickness,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And also he had had some falls that were very like surprising. Like, why is he falling? Like, there's no like uneven ground or anything. But, you know, toddlers toddle. And yeah. So, you know,
he tripped over air. You didn't know.
Right. Like, I knew he was different than his older brother, but it wasn't like he was developing normally. So it was, they weren't huge red flags. They're things that I realized looking back on it. And we've looked at like photos and videos and we're like, oh yeah. So I guess I'm getting ahead of myself. The imaging of his brain showed that there had been many prior strokes prior to the current, or like the one when he was two.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So you can tell with when there's a stroke, it's a hemorrhagic stroke. And so like it leaves almost like a layer of blood that's old blood. So you can see like the new blood from the new stroke and then the old blood. So that was a difficult year. Like, I'll spare you all the details, but we spent a lot of time in the PICU at Children's Hospital LA.
Yikes.
And we did a lot of research, a lot of second opinions, and we were advised that it did have to be removed. So in order for him to survive. And so, yeah, it's a lot.
In order for him to survive.
Yes, in order for him to survive. So the reason why is because the cerebellum sits, again, the last thing I ever wanted was to know anything medical.
Be knowledgeable
about this. But the cerebellum sits above the brainstem, and the brainstem has a very tight space, and it controls your breathing. And so if that blood had sort of expanded beyond the cerebellum, which it did for him, it's a very tight space and it could impact his ability to breathe. Holy so, okay. Yeah. So we knew we had to have surgery. And I will fast forward because we investigated a lot of different surgeons. And we actually thought we were going to do it at Rady in San Diego. And then we found out that the fellow was like being investigated by the medical board for like doing surgeries under the influence of marijuana. So we were like, no problem with marijuana, just not when you're operating on my son's brain.
Right. Right.
So, right. So then we decided, okay, we'll stick with CHLA. It's a long story. Unfortunately, we found out 2 years later, which you do remember this, that it grew back. Yeah. We found out on a routine MRI, it grew back and caused even more damage than the first one. And during that time period, I guess I'm getting ahead of myself. The first surgery was when he recovered from, and that's when I met you. And so
I actually thought that was the one up in Stanford.
No, that was a few years later. He was recovering. So when we first met, he was recovering from his first brain surgery.
Yikes.
He was doing okay. There were a lot of complications. We later learned that they didn't get it all, and that's why it grew back. So the brain is an interesting thing. It's a miraculous organ that we have, but brain damage is tough. And so, you know, dealing with the strokes, which is a brain damage, and the surgery just to get there is another brain damage. Yikes. We were dealing with a lot, you know, a lot of appointments, a lot of, he was going to preschool, so that was great. But, there was a lot of recovery involved, like a lot of rehabilitation.
How was that, though? Can I ask you about sending him to preschool? Was he fine to not have someone with him, or did he have?
He had someone with him.
He had someone with him.
So he always had someone with him.
Always.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure how that worked, so I didn't know.
Yeah. He was, just relearning how to walk, relearning how to talk. It was a lot. Yeah. It was a lot. So he still always has someone with him.
Yeah. I knew that now. I just wasn't sure how that transpired. I didn't know how that worked, I guess, back then, because I didn't really, we didn't talk about it a lot. I know it was very, I know it was very, like, I'd ask how Eli was, and you're like, he's okay. Like, it wasn't, I could tell. Like,
I was still learning.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's okay. It's private. It's your thing. I just wasn't going to be like, tell me everything. But when you were ready, you know, but I would always ask how he was doing.
Yeah. And I do appreciate that. And I know you would, especially when we learned that it had grown back, we weren't messing around. So then we decided, okay, we're finding the best of the best in the world, because Greg's favorite saying is, my son is not a guinea pig. Yeah. And it's sort of, it's funny, but it's not, you know, we're not experimenting on him. And so we went to one of the best cerebrovascular neurosurgeons in the world is at Stanford. And so we were deciding between him. He's not a pediatric surgeon only, but he is a fantastic surgeon. And so we were deciding between him and another surgeon at Boston Children's Hospital, who is equally fantastic. And for various reasons, like, we went to both. So we were trying to figure out, what do we need to do? When do we need to do? We know this is grown back. His surgeon, who, again, I've let go my ill feelings toward him, but I'm obviously wasn't happy that he didn't get it all and that it grew back. He had said, oh, just wait. Maybe we'll reimage in 3 months. And every second opinion was like, just wait. Well, you should reimage in 3 months. And then you can figure out if you need to like go in and take it out again, or we can just watch and wait. Oh. And then I got a phone call one day from Stanford, and they said, we just reviewed your son's images and Dr. Steinberg would like to schedule surgery. And I was like, whoa, okay. Can we come meet him, you know? And so we like drove up to meet him that weekend, and he was like, yeah, it needs to come out again. And this was like, maybe 6 weeks after we had known for 6 weeks that it had grown back. So we went up there, we met him, we loved him. And, you know, it's hard because when you're in a room with someone like that, like, I'm asking the mom questions. And I always tell Greg, like, you ask the doctor questions, I'll ask the mom questions. And I straight out asked him, like, how much, like, you're an adult surgeon, like, do you work on kids? You know, because at that time, it was 4. So yeah. And he said, you know, yeah, I'm in the OR, you know, twice a month for kids. He's not my youngest patient. My youngest patient, I think he said something, was like a baby. I mean, like, you know, 6 weeks or something, young. So I was like, okay. So we're like, okay. We were deciding between Boston and Stanford. And we said, okay, you know, Stanford seems to make sense. So we booked the surgery and we came home. That weekend, Monday morning, Eli has a massive stroke at home. I don't know if you remember that.
I do now.
And I didn't want to go to CHLA, but I knew if I called 911 that's where we would end up. So I'm a little bit crazy. And I waited for my nanny to get there. Do you remember my nanny?
I do.
Yes, because her daughter also babysat your daughter.
Yes.
And I put Eli in the car. Monday morning, I hopped on the 405 and I drove to UCLA Westwood because I was like, I'm not ending up at CHLA. And I walked in carrying him and I'm like, my son is having a stroke, and they're looking at me like I'm crazy. I'm not laughing about it, you know. It was obviously a horrible time in my life.
Right. But it was scary.
But yeah, so we went in. He was having a stroke.
After the surgery at Stanford?
No, this was like after we had met the surgeon.
It
was like literally the day after. Like, whoa. We came home on Sunday. Friday. We came home Sunday. And then this was Monday.
Wow.
And so they were all in communication with each other, like UCLA, Stanford. And Eli was very ill. I mean, he was in the PICU at UCLA for maybe like a week. And then his surgeon said, it's safe. Like, you can fly him up and we'll do the surgery. So I flew him up like a week later. Greg drove with maybe one or both kids. And we had the surgery.
So I'm going to pause you there for 1 second because I just have this question. So all this is going on and you have a pretty much a brand new daughter and like a 6-year-old. Right?
He was 5.
Because Sam is now 6, because if Eli was 4 when you went up to Stanford,
yes.
But even before he was 4. So they're 2 years difference. So all this is going on, you guys. So this is one thing I want to say, and I want to hear this because a few of the things I obviously didn't know. And it's just, as a parent, I can't imagine. And for those that are listening, like, things happen that are all not always wrapped in a package, right? It's actually makes me sad to hear this story because I know I saw you during some of that. And it just, as a mom, I can't imagine, but also I can't imagine having 2 other littles. I mean, yeah. Littles.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, thankfully, we have a lot of support.
Yes.
And so, and in fact, the first time around, I remember I'm a mama bear, right? I'm like tough as nails. If there's something wrong, I'm the person that you call, right? And so when I'm like the first time around, and I mean, this part is going to make everyone, will make you cry. You probably don't know this, but we had been trying to figure out what was going on for the whole week. We were like, what's going on with him? And he's two and like, he can't talk and he can't walk. Like, what's going on? And Mimi's 2 weeks old. Right. And so, the pediatrician said, take him to Tarzana Hospital, insist on imaging. And at that time, you know, Sam's four. So Greg is like, took him to the hospital. I relieved him. Then Greg goes to pick up Sam. And they like kept looking and they kept looking like after the CT. And they're like, is your husband coming back? And they kept saying it. And finally, I was like, just give me the news. You know, I'm like, just give me the news because like I can take it. And so they're like, we're really sorry, but your son has a mass in his brain and his brain is swelling. And we've already contacted CHLA and they're going to send a medical transport team. And when you get there, the neurosurgery team will meet with you and discuss a plan of care with you. Do you want to call your husband? And I said, no. I said, give me a minute and I call my parents. They had just been there for my daughter's birth and they had just gone home back to Vegas. And I called and I said to and they usually drive. And I said to my dad, and they had seen Eli sick, but they were like, okay, we have to go home. I said to my dad, like, I need you guys to come here. Like, get in the car and come now. Cause I knew that like, once I called Greg, it was like, it was all going to be real.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
And so my dad's like, you can't tell me what's wrong. And I was like, no, I just need you to come here. And so like an hour later, he's like, okay, we're at the airport. He's like, we decided to fly. And he's like, what's going on? And so I told him, mm-hmm. He's like, okay. Cause I knew he wasn't, I knew that he couldn't drive with that knowledge, you know?
Yes. And so you couldn't, even just hearing it is just, I have goosebumps. It's just very sad.
So, my parents came, and then that just allows, because when you have a child in the hospital, it's not like, it's not just swip and you have other children at home. It's not just like flipping. It's like, we would relieve each other, but we still needed somebody home, like to watch the kids while we were driving to and from the hospital.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And so it's a lot of juggling. We've spent a lot of time, in the hospital.
A lot of moving parts, you know?
So many. And my parents were great. And, Greg's family also, Greg's, brother and dad have been amazing. Whenever Eli's sick, they come right away. They take over. We have a lot, you know, obviously I also hire caregivers I need to, but the support, like we have a lot of family support, even though they don't live here. So that's good. And I will say, because I always kill the vibe when I talk about it, but his second surgery went really well. We're so thankful we went to Stanford. His doctor did confirm that the reason why it happened again is because the original surgeon didn't get it all. And so we thought, I mean, the head neurosurgeon at CHLA, we thought we were going with the best. But that surgery, you know, he still had to relearn how to walk and talk and do all of those things. And he's still continuing to improve. But I will say that we just went and we go every year to Stanford to image his brain.
Yes, yes.
Has never grown back. So it's now, I guess, 7 years was the summer. And we did a full workup with his surgeon, who I, you know, obviously owe his life to. And I said, you know, now that Eli's 7 years out, like, do we still need to come every year? And he was like, no, you can come every 3 years. And it was like such a relief because, you know, the full exam of everything and looking at his most recent imaging and looking how he's physically and neurologically progressing was great. I mean, and the biggest thing for me, because he lost his speech twice throughout this, and like to see the notes from like the exam where he wrote like speech, because he talks to him and examines him and like speech fluid. It's like, and here a neurosurgeon is saying that his speech is fluid. You know, he doesn't have the speech that is necessarily age appropriate, but to like see that as speech is fluid.
What things are, I know you said like, you know, he might not be age appropriate for where he should be speaking. Is there anything else that is kind of, maybe he's not age appropriate yet?
Yeah. Or? I mean, he's,
or a little behind.
The brain is such a like mysterious thing. And so his brain is still working. Like he still is in rehab even 7 years later from the last surgery.
Wow.
So yeah, he still goes to occupational therapy twice a week. He still has speech therapy 3 times a week.
Wow.
It's a lot. But he's doing really well.
Yeah.
I mean, and he's, you know, he has no cognitive impairment, which means that, he's not intellectually disabled in any way. He just learns a little differently. He still has a hole in the center of his brain. He has permanent brain damage. The brain, you know, when it's damaged, it doesn't regrow or
heal itself.
Or- right. The pathways can grow, like the pathways. But, you know, he has a big hole in the center of his brain. So
it's just constantly on. Yeah. Like, you have to be so mindful of that, too.
Yeah, there's a lot. And so, you know, emotionally, he's got stuff. He has a lot of anxiety. Mm-hmm. And so.
Does he remember?
No, he doesn't remember about the surgeries.
Mm-hmm. Does he remember that? I mean, obviously not the two, but I didn't know if he remembered the four.
He knows that he has to be monitored because he had surgery, but he doesn't remember. He was so young.
Yeah.
And Stanford is so amazing. If you ever have to, I mean, I hope nobody ever has to have a kid in the hospital, but the Lucile Packard Children's Hospital in Palo Alto is phenomenal.
That's
and
amazing.
Yeah, if anyone ever has to be there, if anyone needs to be there, it's the place to be.
So with that, you also, and I'm not 100% educated on this part, but I know because you're such a book of knowledge with just anything, you've also then, you and a partner have helped other people, parents,
yes,
dealing with this and what to do, because you had to learn it, like, what forms do you need,
yes,
and where do you go and who do you talk to? Obviously, you guys are those people to kind of be this jumping point, right?
Yeah. So just before I get to that, just to know my trajectory, I was an employment lawyer before I had kids. I started off as a plaintiff's employment lawyer, handling wage disputes, harassment, discrimination, wrongful termination.
All the fun stuff.
All the good, the juicy stuff. I learned a lot. And then I sort of flipped to the defense side because I was hired by a defense firm who was like, hey, come work with us. And so then I defended corporate America. Employers of massive amounts of employees.
Sure, sure.
I helped advise them and I defended their lawsuits. And then after I became a mom, I realized, okay, I can't litigate like that. Like I used to do, I have to do something else. Especially having a husband who works a trillion hours outside the house. So
literally.
So I had sort of slowed down, had my own practice doing mostly employment, but some other civil rights stuff. And then when Eli was sick, obviously I couldn't work at all. But yes, I did have to navigate all the social services. California has what's called regional centers. They're funded through the California Department of Developmental Services. You're looking at me like I'm crazy. And I'm like, I hope you don't ever know anyone that needs it. But I am happy to explain, always consult with people about what the California Department of Developmental Services. And then there are also programs funded through the California Department of Social Services.
Okay.
So there are those two organizations provide the most support for kids who have disabilities. And Eli, because of his brain damage, he falls under those two programs. Both of them have programs that are funded at the state level and administered at the county level.
Okay.
So, And so I partnered with someone who also has a son who was unfortunately injured by his nanny and became disabled that way. And he also had to navigate how to access services for his child. And so we formed a business. It's called California Advocacy Group. And the programs have changed over the years. I mean, the programs, let me restate that. The programs are what they are, but the California's budget deficit and the altered funding at the federal level has changed how the program is administered.
Mm.
That's probably the best way to say it.
Sure.
And so it's much harder to get services now. It's changed what we do, but yes, we do help families who are sort of navigating whether it's a recent autism diagnosis or an injury that involves the brain, or there are a lot of birth injuries too, like that result in like cerebral palsy, epilepsy.
Really?
Yeah. And so we help a lot of kids. I know. Wow. I see a lot of stuff.
Yeah, that you do. Jeez.
Is tough. So we help families sort of navigate what their options are, how they go about accessing social services. Because I do know firsthand that having a child with additional needs is very stressful. Being a parent in general is not easy, right?
And then even being a parent with three kids is hard. Now you throw in, you know, that. I mean, you know, a disability or whatever you...
It is, yeah.
It is a disability.
Yeah. I used to think disability was like a negative word. No, I have a disabled son.
Yeah.
And I think that I'm... Probably now, first of all, I know more, so now I can talk about it more. I was never like hiding information. So if I didn't give you the full picture, I mean, part of it is
it's fine that you didn't.
I mean, I always put up like a tough facade. It's just who I am. But I was still sort of, I think it was twofold. I was learning like what exactly was going on,
like the scope of everything.
Yeah. And like what I think, I think as a parent, like your initial thing is like, well, what does this mean for the future? And I was so fixated on like, what does this mean for the future? And once I changed my mindset, like I had a kind of like, I'm not going to say come to Jesus because that's probably not the appropriate thing to say, right? I had an awakening where I was like, he's going to live with me for as long as I'm alive. And if he wants to move out, he can move out. I don't know what his future is. I don't know. Right, I have no idea.
Right.
But like once Greg and I realized like he might live with us for the rest of his life, it was kind of a relief because then we didn't have to wonder like, is he not? Where's he going to live? Who, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The piece I'm still working on, which is probably another podcast, is like, how can I be in the best physical shape to live as long as I possibly can for him? because the truth is that I eat my emotions. And so, and you've seen me go up and down a million pounds in the 9 years. Like, I'm not my heaviest. I'm definitely not my lightest, but I eat my emotions.
Sure.
But I need to get to the place where I'm in the best, you know, physical health so that I can, always like or be around as long as I can.
Right. Absolutely. You will be. And you're whatever. I don't know what I'm saying. Whatever. Edit out. So you, I don't know. It's amazing. You do these fundraisers, you do these things, every year. I don't know. Did you do one last year?
It's been like, so COVID kind of threw a wrinkle in it and then I did do it and that it takes a lot out of me. So yeah, I was going to say the patient support group for this, it's called, Alliance to Cure Cavernous Malformation. This is the piece I didn't say. I always skip ahead. There's no cure for this disorder. So the only treatment is brain surgery. There is no cure. There was a cure that was in clinical trial for the last like 2-3 years. Eli wasn't old enough because they were only testing it on adults, but it failed. That's not the right terminology, but like it failed the clinical trial and wasn't shown to treat or cure the cavernous malformations. But I am involved in the support group because number one, being in that group gave me the connections to get to Stanford very quickly, which ultimately saved Eli's life because his surgeon here was telling me, oh, let's re-image in 3 months. He had a massive stroke 6 weeks later. If I had just waited, you know, it would have been disastrous. So that organization has put me in touch with, like, they have what's called centers of excellence, so you can know where to go to who's familiar with the treatment of this.
Is that considered a malpractice?
No. I mean, I think it's a complication of surgery. And
I wasn't sure how that...
No, I mean, look, we're angry at his surgeon for that. But I don't know that it... So the standard of care for malpractice is that somehow he engaged in care that was below like the like he engaged, oh my God, I'm blanking from law school, that somehow he engaged in care that was like below the reasonable person standard.
Oh.
And like with these types of lesions, you're so mindful of like, first of all, you have to take out the lesion, but then you have to be careful not to take any extra, because you're talking about brain tissue, right?
Yeah.
And so you want to make sure, like, I think the approach is always to be on the conservative side.
Yeah.
Meaning don't remove too much. And so
he might have left a little bit, or
I think, yeah. And
or is it very cautious,
so
too cautious, maybe.
The part that I actually would might even go after the radiologist, because his Stanford surgeon said, he showed me, like, because he had a post-op MRI, which is like maybe 3 days after that first surgery. And he said, like, I can see with my eye on the MRI where it is. He's like, the MRI only picks up like 0.1 millimeter. He's like, I can see it. He's like, the surgeon didn't see it. The radiologist didn't see it. He's like, I see it. So, and he confirmed it when he went in. But it's like, first of all, I'm not in the business of suing doctors. And I also, even though I like had a lot of anger, which I've released, you know, about that surgeon, it's just an unfortunate circumstance.
Yeah. And then I wanted to ask one other thing, and this is like, so just because people, you know, health insurance, can I ask you about that? I know that's, you know, but I'm sure you guys have great insurance, but this is not cheap.
So yes and no. So first of all, we don't have any employer sponsored health insurance because we're both technically considered self-employed.
Yeah.
And okay. So even though Greg works for like a group, it's like they're all sort of individuals. And so there's no employer-sponsored healthcare. But so that is a whole other episode too.
Sure.
Because we pay for health insurance. But what I will say, and this is what I do help people with, is that because individuals who are consumers of the regional center are eligible for what's called a waiver. It's an institutional deeming waiver is the longer name of it. But so he qualifies for Medi-Cal because,
oh, okay.
Yeah, so we do have private insurance for him. But the great thing is that because, so our private insurance picks up the bulk of it, and then any co-pays Medi-Cal covers, which is really great.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I didn't want to be like taking the emotion out of it, but also the logistics in
it.
No,
it's a stress.
I mean, you go yeah. to a doctor for just a little nothing. I'm sure your knee was a lot, you know what I mean? So just I can only imagine all the stuff, all the costs with that. And that's also probably something very stressful.
Yeah, for all parents. I mean, obviously we can afford like private health insurance too, which covers a lot, but yeah, that's one thing we help people with.
And that's what's really special about what you and your partner do, is because even if it's just being a sounding board and like guiding people in the right direction, because I think for a lot of people, like, you're just emotionally like, oh my God, my son. But at the same time, there's all these moving parts that you need to figure out. And I think it's pretty great that you do that, because you guys had to do it.
Yeah, we definitely, that's one thing people like, is, you know, because we've kind of been through the trenches, so that we know, you know, what to do. We can also sympathize. I mean, a lot of people, probably you feel this way too, like don't know what questions to ask and you don't want to offend, you know, but it's like, and sometimes I have to catch myself because I can be so clinical about it. Like, you know, like when I ask, you know, when I'm trying to interview a family to see if I can help them, sometimes I'll ask questions and I'm like, wait a minute, I should be a little more sensitive about this. Like,
because
I'm like, do they do this, 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 this? But then I stop myself and I'll be like, okay, hey, listen, I went through that too. Trust me, it's going to get better, you know? And I think that people do feel relieved that they have us in their corner, but we can't that's the thing, is like, we can't promise anything, you know?
No,
we can just help.
No.
Other than like the ability to help people, you know, but usually we're successful in helping people across the board.
That's great. Because I just feel like with something like that, your mind is all over the place on the personal aspect, on
totally.
The mom aspect, and then, or the, you know, parent aspect, and then you got to throw in all this stuff, and you probably know way more than, you know, you want to know. You never wanted to know all this information,
never.
But you do. And I think it's pretty amazing that you, you know, can help other people that, you know, sadly have to go through, you know, some of these things, like I said, not everything is wrapped in a bow, and it's hard. It's really hard. And I mean, I've seen Eli, and he seems great. You know,
he's happy.
He's gets on his iPad when he comes home. He has his snacks. Life is good. Yes. I mean, that iPad. Fuck the iPad. Man. I mean,
now he's moved on to the laptop. But yeah.
I'm like, Charlotte, I feel like I just want to take it and chuck it. But also she loves it. She watches Dance Moms on it. So, life is so good. I'm like, is that still on? She's like, oh no, it's been over it was on like a 2014 or something.
So
I'm
here's
like,
the funny thing. I should connect you with my partner because before he became a parent of a disabled son, I'm pretty sure he produced that show.
Oh my God.
He was a producer.
Charlotte would die.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
She talks to me like she'll tell me something like I know this person.
You want to look it up right now and see?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
She'll tell me, Mommy,
I'm pretty
so-and-so can't do the dance. And I'm like, from your school? No, from Dance Moms.
Oh my God, it's hilarious. Oh my God. As if they're on a first name.
Like, we're friends. Like, Sally. I'm like, who the frick is Sally? I don't know who these people are.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. I'm pretty sure he was a producer on that show.
That's so funny. Because I'm like, of all the shows, like, how did she even find that?
Yeah. Oh, he was a director. I'm sorry.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he was a director in 2013, I think he was a director.
What?
Oh, wait. Yeah. I'll put you guys.
Oh my God. Charlotte's going to be like, can we go meet Bob or whatever?
Oh, wait. I think.
Oh my gosh. That's hilarious.
I'm pretty sure. I feel like, he was a director on that show.
Oh my God, that's so funny. She just randomly picked that show and she tells me the other night, guess what, Mommy? Guess what season I'm on? I'm like, what? She's like, 4.
Oh man.
I'm like, oh my God.
But how many seasons are there?
I think there's 9.
Oh my gosh.
But she watches it and talks like they're just, you and I are just chatting about life.
Like, is it age appropriate though?
Like, it is. It is.
They don't like talk about anything.
No. Okay. I kind of peek, I listen to some of it because sometimes she'll have her headphones on, but I'll say, let me watch that with you for a few minutes just to kind of see. Cause I don't know. I know that one lady got like sued for being like a tyrant or something.
Yeah.
She was weird. I don't know. But anyways, Charlotte, it's just funny that, iPad was what I was talking about. I wanted to hear about your story because I think, we all have stories and I love talking to you, but you've had something that is pretty terrifying as a parent. I think pretty amazing that he's okay.
Yeah.
And that you and Greg just, did all these amazing things and that you're helping people, kind of because sometimes we feel like we're alone when we're, doing.
Yeah.
It's just day to day, some things are hard and in this situation much harder than that Charlotte doesn't have a good palate. You know what I mean? This was life and death and it was scary and it was, I'm sure. And I met you not right when it happened, but really quickly. So yeah. I've seen the progression. I've seen I've seen all the stuff when you guys went up to Stanford and stuff and just how, just amazing you are in so many ways. I feel, and I'm going to cry when I say this, I already can feel it. One of the most special things about you, besides just being awesome and just having that connection with you. And it's very special. I go into people's houses, and it, on a side note, David would say to me one time, you just go in people's houses. You have no idea what you're going into. Like I have no clue. It could be a guns and, who knows? I've never had a situation where I felt unsafe, but you meet somebody and you connect with somebody. And thank you so much for just being an amazing friend, an amazing person, and listening to the same things over and over again, because you know that my heart and my brain were in two different places. And I just appreciate you. We're not alone. I did not feel alone when I'd go visit you, and I would be honest with you. And I thank you so much. And I hope to do 1,000 more episodes with you. And how do you know if there's a new episode? You like, subscribe, you follow, you check us out on YouTube, and you listen to Judy. And if you have any questions or comments, please leave them on the website. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Thank you. That's a wrap on today's episode of Unpacking with Jennifer. I hope you're walking away with a little inspiration and a few practical tips to make life at home just a little bit easier. If you love the episode, be sure to subscribe so you never miss a new one. And if you found it helpful, I'd love if you left a quick review. It helps more moms like us find the show. This episode was engineered by Robert Altshuler. Music by Coldfire. Recorded and mixed at Command Recording Studios.